Hello and welcome to Sim Radio here on the Sisters in Music Network. It's Monday Music Madness and you're tuned in to Mixing It with Nikki Chris. This is Nikki, and in case you don't know anything about me, I'm a singer-songwriter from Raleigh, North Carolina. My show celebrates women and men in the music and entertainment industry, providing an avenue for them to showcase their talent. Our motto, Sisters in Music, Together We Are Stronger. My guest today is a vocalist, composer, and producer, and has been featured as a vocalist on over 500 Indian film soundtracks. Currently signed as an artist on Sony Music India, he released an instrumental album called Vrindavan. He additionally collaborated with Grammy Award winner Ricky Cage on his two Grammy-winning albums, Winds of Samsara and Divine Tides, as a vocalist and vocal arranger. He additionally recently debuted as a singer in an Indian film musical by Academy Award-winning composer A.R. Rahman of Slumdog Millionaire. Please join me in welcoming the super talented Davin Ekambrin. How are you, Davin?
I'm doing great, Nikki. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
You are most welcome. I'm really excited. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're calling in from India, which is really exciting, and we really appreciate
it. Technology is great.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Kick things off here. Tell us a little bit about how you got started in music.
Okay, so I'm basically a Jersey boy. I grew up most of my early years till college in New Jersey. And I was, you know, into music right from, you know, a young age of five. I was always into listening to pop, the whole top 40. And then by the time I got to junior high school, my taste shifted towards like hard rock, like, you know, bands like Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, and then eventually went on to like Van Halen and Metallica. And that's when I was, into playing guitar. And then once I kind of saw that more than the guitar players, lead singers are getting more attention, then I kind of shifted over to like George Michael and Richard Marx and like John Cicada type of music. And I joined the high school choir, and that's how I started my singing. And then eventually, because I'm from, you know, southern India, so there's a huge, you know, South Indian population in the U.S., and I used to see a lot of the Indian artists, you know, from the 80s and 90s coming and performing there. And that's how I kind of started, like, okay, let me try and, you know, get a break in that particular industry. And that's how I kind of initially got signed with a licensee of Warner Brothers in India. And they were called Magnasound. And so they were, like, releasing, like, Van Halen's albums in India as the licensee partner. So they signed me up. And then that's how they flew me to India in the summer of 97. And I think within a few months of my first album that I released, Academy Award winning composer A.R. Rahman listened to my album, and then he called me and gave me my debut, you want to call it a Bollywood song, which is titled Oh Maria, and then that's what launched my singing career in India. This is my 24th year as of this month that I've been in the industry over here in India, and it's been a lot of fun. I've got to travel the world singing Indian music. So it's been a wonderful journey, and in recent times, I joined the Recording Academy, like you, and I'm also a fellow voting member. So I got to meet more international artists and getting a much more global exposure now, you know, which is what I've been doing the last 2 years. I wanted to kind of get out of my comfort zone in the South Indian music scene and try and, you know, break into the global market.
That is absolutely fantastic. You probably don't even know this about me. I am a Jersey girl as well. I actually was born in Jersey and spent many of my young years there too. So, you know, you're talking about a lot of the Jersey bands, the hair bands and all of that stuff. So I can certainly relate.
Yes. Well, which town were you in?
So I was in southern Jersey for the most part. So down by the shore, like Stone Harbor, Wildwood area.
Oh, nice. I love Wildwood. That's where my marching band always used to do the Labor Day parade. Every year, or Memorial Day parade.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. What a small world.
My family still resides in Jersey, so we're in Cherry Hill, just a little bit, I think just the initial southern part of New Jersey. So it's great.
I know.
I get to go
exactly
to Atlantic
Hill
City
is.
More often. Than
yep. Well, no, I know where Cherry Hill is because we lived there for 2 years at one point in time. So, wow. Small world.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about the work that you did with 3-time Grammy winning musician Ricky Cage, because I know that you had the honor of working with him on 2 of his Grammy
yes.
winning albums.
Yeah, so me and Ricky have been buddies since 2005. So, you know, we met again through my mentor who, you know, initially flew me to India. So, I mean, Ricky lives in another city called Bangalore, which is kind of like in the western side of South India. It's a very cosmopolitan city, if you want to call it that. And he was doing a lot of ad commercial work and, you know, audiovisual work. And he was also doing the whole lounge music is what I remember he told me. Like, he had a couple of lounge albums that he initially released. And then slowly he was, you know, developing more and more albums. He did an album called Shanti Orchestra, which actually was one of his earlier big albums that he initially, you know, collaborated on a few tracks with next collaborator, Wouter Kellerman from South Africa. And that's why I, you know, came to know that Ricky is kind of, you know, pushing his music on a global stage, you know, when he released Shanti Orchestra in 2012. And by then I already, like, you know, was doing a lot of other work for him. And then in 2013, 14 is when I initially sang my portion of one of the tracks on Winds of Samsara. And that's when he said, you know, I'm doing this big album with Wouter, you know, together. And we're, you know, getting musicians from all over the world. My friend was from New York, South Africa. You know, they had this whole concept of, you know, bringing, you know, Mandela meets Gandhi and talking about, you know, peace, of, you know, how both countries have, you know, advocated peace through their leaders of that time. And it won the Grammys. You know, I still remember December 2014, he got nominated, and I was so excited for him. And then I think end of Jan, early Feb 2015, it won the Best New Age category. So I was extremely thrilled for him. And it was a major feat that he did, you know, being at young age of, I think, 31 or 32, and he won that along with Wouter. And, of course, it made the entire country really proud, you know, youngest Grammy winner at that time.
Yes, and that's one of my favorite albums. That is actually right around the time that I met Ricky and Wouter as well. So we have mutual friends in that particular musician world. I know the two of them quite well as well, and it is actually one of my favorite albums in that particular category and still is today. So fantastic. All right, I am going to have to pick on him about the lounge album stuff because I didn't know that.
But he did really well with that. He had a couple of albums that really did well with Universal, and that's how I knew that, you know, he was getting his music heard outside of India, you know, because it was a very big challenge. You know, the time before YouTube and Spotify, you know, that getting your albums was all about, you know, you had to manufacture your own CDs and get them, you know, physically distributed. I mean, today you can just write a song in your bedroom, you know, record it on your laptop, mix and master it at home, and just upload it to any of your, you know, distribution online, you know, companies that it's available for anybody on the planet to listen to on any of the streaming apps, you know, and which is a huge shortcut in today's market. But back then, you know, you had to have a lot of, you know, willpower, you know, to go through making the artwork and do the master CD, make sure, you know, everything is right, and, you know, make sure your CDs are distributed to the right stores and you're going to the right, you know, distribution companies. It's a lot of work to do that, which, you know, I really always commended him and was really amazed how he was so disciplined in doing that. You know, he was very relentless about, you know, he was striving, and he still is striving, you know. I don't think I've ever seen a day since then that Ricky's on vacation. He's working and working and working.
No. You're exactly correct. Even today, I do know that about him. All right. Well, let's switch gears and let's talk about your music because you just released a new album. I believe
yes.
I'm going to try and pronounce this correctly again. So it's called
Brindavan. I'll start it for you. It's called Brindavan.
Brindavan. Okay. So great.
Yeah.
So I was close.
So that actually was
not,
Brindavan actually was a very mythological place where there was a mythological god called Krishna, and he was always known for playing the bamboo flute, or like the bansuri, as they call that. So Vrindavan is the place or the garden where he was always like roaming around. So that's why I called it Vrindavan, because there's a lot of, you know, flute, Indianized flute combined with smooth jazz sax, which I had collaborated with my friend Nell Bucktower, who lives in Mauritius. He's a trained jazz saxophone player. And then my other friend, Vijay Gopal, and another friend named Kamalakar. So both of these gentlemen played a lot of the flute on the album. So that was just like my kind of like, you know, getting my old smooth jazz influences, combining it with, you know, contemporary Indian music, if you want to call it that.
I do want to call it that, but I had not heard a lot of your music before we started talking about bringing you on the show. And when you shared
right.
with me this next, I'm going to play a walk through Vrindavan, and we're going to put that on in just a minute. I actually was
right.
very, very surprised, because I was not expecting the contemporary instrumental jazz flavor at all. I really wasn't,
right.
especially because of, you know, especially because of the vocal work that you do, right? So I was very
right.
much expecting more world music, Indian music, with a lot of the Indian elements and things like that. And then I started listening to this, I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. So I'm really excited, because the two songs that you sent me are fantastic, and I love them, and I've actually gone out and listened to the entire album after listening to those two, and it's a wonderful, wonderful album, and
Thank you so much.
Hope you're doing well with it. You're welcome so much. I hope you're doing well with it. If not, it's going to pick up, because it really is a really great album. And with that, guys, let's put this on right now. This composition is called A Walk Through Vrindavan. And here it is by Dave and Ecombrin. mentioned, it's absolutely a beautiful composition. I love the jazz elements in it. You've got 3 million plus Spotify monthly listeners. That is phenomenal, right? And it sounds like it's just blossomed over the past couple of years. I guess you had, you know, around 2000.
Yeah, I wasn't on Spotify until 2020. So I think I just went... I kind of became, or I was interested in becoming a voting member, is when I kind of like verified my profile. I found my profile, you know, streamlined it and got everything, you know, set. So it's, you know, verified. And all of my releases, like what I've sung for other people, as well as my own work. And then I think when I first signed on and claimed my profile, I was at about, I think, 275,000 monthly listeners. And then once I claimed it, I think within like 4 months, it went to like 500,000. And I was like, great, that's nice that it's growing. And then I think within another couple of months, I mean, it hit the first million. And I was like, wow, okay, that's nice. People are, you know, kind of tuning in on me. And you know, I ended up getting more followers as well on that. And for some bizarre reason, it's just going up like, I think, 5 or 10 grand every day. So I'm really grateful to all the listeners that are tuning into my music and searching for my music, you know, on Spotify. And it's great. I mean, it just shows, I'm just happy that audiences are listening to the work, you know, and at least coming to search for my work and come to my page and, you know, and follow it. So I'm really happy with that.
Yeah, you should be, because being a fellow artist, I mean, I have nowhere near that many amount of followers, right? I mean, it just goes to the testament of the work that you've done, right, with singing in a lot of films and having a lot of music and working with, you know, people like Ricky, right? I mean, it just goes to the testament of the hard work that you've put in, and I think it's absolutely awesome.
Well, it's been a great journey. I just love the journey. I'm really not looking at, you know, how far I'm going. I'm just happy to keep going in any direction forward, which is the best thing for any artist, you know, to thrive for. Just keep going forward and enjoy every moment of everything new that's coming in.
And that's all that we can do, right?
Yes, and especially in today's, you know, climate of music, you know, because gone are the days of, like, you know, having big labels distribute your CDs and companies. Everything is, you know, digital, and people are just swiping on all the apps, whether it's TikTok or Instagram. So you need not be a big major label artist to be recognized today across the globe. You could be singing any kind of a song in any language. And I think ever since the Gangnam Style became a global hit back in 2012, mm-hmm. it's really opened up, you know, the music community to not just, you know, attack for, you know, English music.
One of the questions that I ask all of my composers, singer-songwriters is, do you have any type of composing or songwriting tip or trick that you would like to share? So I'm going to ask you that question now also.
I think it can come from, inspiration comes from anything. I feel, you know, when I did the Walk to Vrindavan, the song itself, you know, it was just a song that I kind of, you know, produced. And that just kind of came, you know, because it's not in a 4-4 tempo. It's in a 5-4 time signature. And then I actually was listening to something. There was like a nice sax player that I found on Instagram. And I'm like, I just love that sax tone. I would love to make a song with this kind of a sax tone. And this is like June of 2021. And then I recalled I had another, you know, musician friend in Mauritius who was Nels Bucktower. I called him and I said, you have a recording set up at home. I have a melody in my head. Can we work on it? And can I send you the tracks to just play over? And then he said, sure. And then I said, okay, let me take this tune and let me, like, make two variations of it where it's, like, one interpretation is, like, the whole, like, smooth jazz, you know, genre, which is, like, with the flavor of, like, Grover Washington, Kenny G, or a Dave Koz kind of a, you know, take on it. And then let me mix it with like an Indianized flute and just, you know, it'll be like a whole, the melody, you know, presented in two different interpretations together as a duet. And then when the final master came, I was like thrilled. You know, I got to work with a full 21-piece string section and Indian percussion players. You know, it just was a great meeting of a lot of talent in one song. And both the lead players, Vijay Gopal and Nell, they just really did an incredible job with the melody, which I'm just grateful for their interpretation, you know, of they took it to the next level. You know, though I composed it, they're the soul behind the song.
Yes, and it's good. I love that. Inspiration can come from anywhere, and you're exactly correct. Lots of people do various fun things to get inspiration with their compositions and their music, and I love the fact that you did different versions or tried different elements and things like that, because that actually helps as well, too. So that's a great tip. Awesome. Okay, this is a great place to take a short break here from a word from one of our partners in podcasting. This is my BFF. This is Chatting with Nat. We'll be right back on Mixing It with Nikki Chris here on the Sim Radio Network.
Chatting with Nat is a podcast for independent women seeking to speak their truth and to break down barriers. We host honest conversations that help to guide and empower women. Speak your truth and set yourself free. Let your voice be heard.
And we're back on Mixing It with Nikki Chris on the Sim Radio Network. And my guest, David E. Combrin. We talked a little bit about earlier about the fact that you grew up in New Jersey, right? You know, so
yes. It's
not a very common journey to go from New Jersey to Indian cinema, global performances, things like that. And you obviously alluded to some of that already, but let's talk about this journey because it is unique. And now you're living in India, you're doing all these fun things.
My first New Jersey township where I went to like kindergarten and my early grade school was Ocean Township, which is like right next to Asbury Park.
Bruce Springsteen.
Exactly. You know, so by the time I was like, you know, because initially we were in Ohio. And I was just there hardly for like 2 years, you know, when I was like a toddler, when my parents initially moved to the U.S. But right from the age of four, I just fell in love with music. I still remember when the first song that gave me a lot of emotional impact was this song called "It's Gonna Be a Cool Night, Just Let Me Hold You by the Firelight." I think his name is Paul Davis, if I'm not mistaken. That was the first song that really haunted me at the age of four. And I heard that at a hospital because I actually, broke my ring finger in one of the spring doors. It kind of crushed. So I was stuck in the hospital overnight. And then this song was on the radio. And I was like, wow, it's a great song. And then other songs like from Air Supply and Queen and Blondie, I mean, and Michael Jackson's, you know, Don't Stop to Get It Up and Rock With You. And then you had like Hall & Oates came in at that time. And then Air Supply was there. So all these great pop artists were giving great music. And then I just got addicted to it. So by the time I got to New Jersey, you had like Phil Collins came out, you know, "You Can't Hurry Love." You know, that was out. And you had like Lover Boy. And I mean, you name it. And then it just kept going on and on. And then came Thriller. Like Thriller came out in 83 with Beat It. And then that's it. It's just like by then I was like so immersed in music. Like, all I did every day after school was just have the radio on. And whenever I could, I would just tape the songs off the radio onto my cassette because I think at that time my parents weren't too keen on spending $10, $12 on original audio cassettes every month. You know, and back then, I used to remember they kept on having these offers on TV, you know, where you could buy like three records with like 40, you know, songs compiled together. I don't know if you remember that. You like pay like a penny first, and then you pay like, you know, installments of like $20 a month for like a year for those three albums.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember when I first saw this first CD was Off the Wall. Off the Wall was the first CD I saw they were selling at, you know, a Tower Records or I forgot the name of the record stores back then, you know, a Record Town or something. And I was like, wow, because I would always go and check out these albums just to see the credits and see pictures because I was never going to be, you know, buying them at the time. I just was always an ardent fan of, you know, different artists at the time. And then by the time I got to junior high school and by then I shifted to Freehold Township from Ocean Township, which, you know, is like near Great Adventure, Six Flags. And by the time I, you know, reached there, Bon Jovi entered. The whole glam rock, Bon Jovi, David Lee Roth just came in with Just Like Paradise. You know, had all those, like, you know, the glam rock boys. Poison just came out with Talk Dirty to Me, you know. So all these things were going on, and I'm like, you know, I bought my first guitar then when I was, like, 13, and I started playing all these tracks. Then by the time I was in eighth grade and I grew, I had, like, a little mullet, about, like, a five-inch mullet of hair in the back. My parents got scared because I'm always wearing, like, you know, death metal band shirts, like whether it's Megadeth or Anthrax or Metallica. And they're like, oh, my God, we are very worried about our son. You know, so I was like, don't worry, Dad. I'm not, you know, I'm not smoking or smoking weed. I just like the music. And then they kind of got me, like, you know, into one Indian band, you know, which was in Monmouth County. And then they asked me to join the band and play some Indian music. And initially I was like, okay, this is, like, a little odd for me. It's a very new sound that I'm listening to, and a huge, a drastic change from Metallica, if you want to put it at that. But then I started enjoying that as well. That was a whole other genre, and that's how I kind of got interested in Indian music. And then that kind of, you know, continued. So I was, like, leading, like, two different genres. I was hearing, you know, the English music on one side, from, you know, pop rock to heavy metal, and then I was listening to Indian music on the other side. And by the time I got to high school is when my other, my immediate junior, you would definitely know him as the, he's the actor Cal Penn. So Cal Penn was my junior. You know, I'm class of 94, he was class of 95. But his full name actually is Cal Penn Modi, like the Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi. So, and then he changed his name too. Yeah, so that's how he changed his name from Cal Penn to Cal Penn. So to kind of make the whole, whatever, the stage name, you know. So he split his first name into two. And, you know, kind of to match the Sean Penn and a Cal Penn. And so we were the only two Indian kids in the entire district. Indian guys, to say the least, at that particular time. And then I went to college in University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, and that was, like, when I got my first taste of, like, global, like, multicultural experience. I mean, there was, like, everybody who was in that campus of 70,000 students, and it just really exposed me to so much of culture and more Indian people, because I never saw Indian kids growing up till the age of 18. If I had to meet another Indian kid, it'd be like a 30-mile drive, you know, to see another Indian kid that my dad, you know, colleague would from office would have. And then that's when I realized, okay, I don't want to be an engineer. I don't want to, you know, do what every Indian parent is making their kids do, either becoming a doctor, a lawyer, a pharmacist, or an engineer. And I was spending, you know, more time in the music hall and skipping, like, my physics classes, my calculus classes. And that's when I decided I got to do something, and, you know, and I can't do this. I don't want to waste my dad's money on this degree. I would rather, you know, pursue my music career and make that happen. And that's what happened. So the summer of 95 was the summer of my freshman year in college. And then I took the summer off and came to India. And I visited another friend, and that's when I looked up the Yellow Pages for this record label called Magnasound, which I discovered was the licensee of Warner Brothers for India. And that's how I got in. You know, I showed them a demo tape that I made in high school, and, you know, they liked it, and they gave me a $10,000 contract to make an album, which I was like, wow, in 1995, $10,000 is good money for making an album.
Oh, my God.
So I was just about, like, 23. I was like 20, you know, when I, you know, decided to completely quit college completely. And by the time I finished the album and came to India, I was about 21. And that was, like, a huge, like, you know, it was like 21 years in the U.S. And then suddenly I land up in India, and it's a completely, like, you know, new jungle of a city. You know, because it's almost like another Manhattan, you know, where it's like a wolf pit. You know, you got to be on your toes, and, you know, it's a mad rush of people, you know, looking to get a break. It's almost like, you know, how people are auditioning on Broadway. You got to be on your toes and keep facing rejection and humiliation and everything. Fortunately, I had a good mentor who, you know, who guided me really well, and I got a great opportunity with, you know, A.R. Rahman right away, within, like, 4 months of moving to India. And then by 2000, I had a great American tour with him, where, like, I performed at the Nassau Coliseum, and then I did, like, the Shrine Auditorium in L.A., and then we did, like, the Sky Dome in Toronto. So it was, like, my first time I'm performing in around, like, 20,000 people in one go. And then that's been a great, you know, an ongoing journey since. And then by 2005 is when I met up with Ricky, and you know, we became the, you know, really good friends, and we were collaborating nonstop the entire time. You know, it's, we're always in touch. I even sang a song for him recently, which I'm looking forward to the release of in the coming weeks.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, yes.
Excellent. Well, it seems like it's been and sounds like it's been quite a journey, and I'm sure there's going to be more to come. And I just love the fact that you're a Jersey boy now with a little Indian flair. I think it's fabulous. Awesome. Love it. Absolutely love it. And you can certainly hear that influence of New Jersey in your music. I can definitely hear that. And I'm looking forward to more. So let's keep things moving along and switch gears just a little bit before we get to the second song that you brought with you. Can you tell us about the collaboration that you had with 2-time award-winning composer A.R. Rahman? Because that's like a major, major, major deal. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, so he's an amazing composer. So I was a big fan of him from the time he became a composer in 93. You know, like, and he was a huge inspiration for me to even want to go into music full time. He kind of brought the whole digital keyboard sound to Indian music, you know. The whole, you know, of bringing the analog sound, and he just revolutionized, you know, all of the generic styles of music that Indian music was prior to 1993. And since then, he has just been, you know, giving 30 years of hits. You know, he's still, like, the number one composer in India. You know, he's done a lot of international films like Pele, you know, Slumdog Millionaire, you name it. He worked with Andrew Lloyd Webber on Bombay Dreams, you know, on the West End. And he's still doing a lot of other films as well now, from what I know. You would have heard a lot of his songs on a lot of different films. You know, they would have put excerpts of his music in the background scores, and some of his singles have been remixed as well into different Hollywood movies. And you definitely remember his other film, which was a second nomination for the Oscars, 127 Hours,
mm-hmm.
Again for Danny Boyle.
He is amazing. He is amazing.
Yeah. And he's still, you know, looking to do new things, you know, in the field of music, which is so inspiring. You know, he's not, you know, sitting on his laurels. He's won everything, you know, 2-time Grammy, 2-time Oscar, BAFTA, Golden Globe. I mean, like, there's nothing he hasn't won on the planet. Yeah. You know, and recently he did an amazing concert in Malaysia for 72,000 people, which is like 3,000 more people than Michael Jackson had, which is great.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And hopefully you get to do more work with him.
Yes, I'm looking forward. It's been a while, but again, I want to do things on my own these days. You know, I'm right now, because I came to India initially just to be a composer myself, but then people, you know, got interested in my singing, and then I realized that was getting me ahead, you know, more than my music. So I said, let me just, you know, take that, because that was taking me to multiple countries for concerts and whatnot, you know. And I mean, the way I've been having my touring career prior to COVID was incredible. I think, you know, when I said, tell that to people, they were like, how do you do that? And I said, even I don't know, because I would have had a show in Toronto on like a Wednesday, and then like Thursday I get a call to do another gig in Germany, in Frankfurt, and in Amsterdam. So I would fly to Philly. I mean, fly from Philly to Frankfurt for the Saturday concert, Sunday do Amsterdam, and then Monday morning fly back to Philly, and then land in Philly, and then take the flight back to Abu Dhabi from JFK, and then reach India, take another plane, and get back to Norway for another show. So I feel like this is incredible. And this is all from doing Indian music, which is, you know, the thing that was always, you know, very surprising. I was like, I was amazed to see the global audience for Indian music.
Well, it's because it's different, right? It's interesting. I mean, and that's one of the things that really inspires me when listening to music is I like to listen to things that are different. I don't like to listen to things that are constantly always the same, which is why I actually tend to gravitate towards you know, alternative and rock music, because it is a little bit different, right? It's not.
Right, right.
It can be very unstructured where, I mean, I like pop too, and I do pop, but when I'm listening to things, I actually like listening to music that, you know, I'm not hearing the same thing. They, you know, every single
right,
song
right.
sounds exactly the same because it gets boring, right? And that's where
right.
I think, you know, Indian music has a leg up because it combines so many different elements, right? And then, like, just
right, right.
the tone of, you know, the vocalists are just also so different. You just get pulled in and you become mesmerized. So I can certainly
right,
see
right.
that there's a market for that.
The music today is becoming global, you know, so language is no longer a barrier
mm-hmm.
or a limitation, you know, for people to like the song,
yeah.
you know, like people just love to hear music regardless of the lyric and not knowing what it means, as long as it sounds great, you know, and all the apps today, like you have Instagram and TikTok, where you're able to put different songs in your video clips, which expose and market
right.
the song more than just waiting to hear it on the radio or on, you know, there's more chances of getting exposed to music today, you know, because before you'd have to like randomly wait for a station to play a song and you should be listening to that song at that particular time, given time, you know, and that's how you'd get exposed to stuff. But today it's like everything's on your phone and you're watching every day, you know, your social media pages and, you know, and different platforms that you're exposed to global things right away.
Yes, I completely agree. Okay, let's talk about I Need You Now. What is this composition about?
Okay, so I Need You Now, it was a very mellow. Initially, I had written it for a vocal track, you know, and I said I wanted to convert this into a instrumental track on alto sax and gave a very, like, a somber kind of a tone to the song, kind of a very, like, a missing of the person who is, you know, no longer in your life when you long for that person. So that's kind of like the basic tone in which I composed the song. And I was so thrilled to collaborate with Grammy-winning pianist Taylor Eiste, who played the piano. And again, Nell Buck Tower played the alto sax. And a few of my other friends, you know, played bass and drums. And then I had another 21-piece string section in there as well. And I was really thrilled to see how much of airplay that got globally. You know, it's been on UK radio, Australian radio, a couple of US radio stations, and it's done well in the last couple of months, and it's won a few awards, like the Global Music Awards and One Earth Awards, and it's again nominated for the One World Music Radio Awards as well in the Contemporary Instrumental.
Oh, how wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome so much. All right, well, let's put on this award-winning composition. This is I Need You Now by Davin Ekbrum.
Thank you.
wonderful, wonderful composition. Like I said before, you know, listening through this album, I was actually very, very much like so excited because I'm sitting here going, you know, this is jazz. It's got all these jazz elements and influences, but you've also blended a lot of the Indian influence as well, too. And I think it makes it very, very unique. And I can certainly see why you're winning all these awards with your music and why fans want to listen to you and see you.
So I mean, this is like one I'm really thrilled with this whole journey now is I'm just getting back to doing music just for me. I'm not doing anything for any, you know, big film or something commercially, you know, viable. It's just whatever I feel and I'm putting it down on, you know, on the studio, and then it's manifesting into something else with the collaboration with other artists. The inclusion from the radio stations and the promoters who are, you know, supporting it. And that's, I'm really grateful to all of them and the listeners who are, you know, are listening.
Awesome. And that's all we can do, right? Thank our listeners. All right. Well, before we sign off, is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners? How about where they can find you on social media?
Yes, I'm on social media on my Instagram, David Acambra Music on Instagram. And, again, on Facebook as well as David A. Comrum. And you can reach it to me on either. I mean, I'm there on Instagram, so that's the best place to reach me since everybody's on Instagram and you can connect with me. And then you can look for me on Spotify as well and hear my playlist of my tracks and my other releases on my page. And, again, my profiles are there on all the platforms of Apple Music, iTunes, Amazon Music, and Tidal, and you name it. It's all there. And do check out Vrindavan. I would love for everybody to check out my recent album, Vrindavan, and let me know. I would love to hear your thoughts on that for the listeners who are hearing the music, and let me know what I could do more in my upcoming project.
All right. Well, I'd like to thank my wonderful guest, David Acambra, for taking the time to chat with me today. It has really been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Mixin' It. On behalf of all of us here at Sim Radio, this is Nikki Chris. Until next time on Mixin' It.